At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
All right, I admit it. After trying to calm everybody down on last week's Blue Moon Podcast, I didn't expect to be researching the times when Manchester City's season has been a successful one after two defeats in the opening three games. Joking aside though, that isn't in today's show, but they did win the title in 1968 after launching the season with a draw and two defeats, so all's not lost just yet. On today's show, we'll be discussing what went wrong at Brighton. The players are new, the team is refreshed, but the same thing happened as the last time they went to the Amex, losing 2-1 from being 1-0 up. So why did it all go wrong? Answers possibly coming up. Also on this week's show, we'll be discussing City's transfer window. There were a few departures on deadline day, plus the arrival of a new goalkeeper in Gianluigi Donnarumma. How is that going to work? We'll hear from the journalist, writer and noticer at The Athletic, John McKenzie, to find out more. Plenty to get through and no putting it off any longer. I'm David Mooney, and with me this week we've got City fan Casey.
You all right?
And for the Manchester Evening News, Simon Bakowski.
Hello.
Hello. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of everything first, but I thought I'd lighten the mood a little bit first before we get into all the dark stuff. Obviously, City have dipped into the transfer market with Donnarumma and not really sure what we're going to get. So I just want to know what the last thing you bought that you weren't really sure what you were going to get, or when you got something you weren't expecting.
Last week I bought a one of these £10 easy peeler sets off TikTok.
You've been shopping on TikTok shop.
Yeah, well, I'm down with the kids, mate. I don't know what's up with you. Just a casual 37-year-old man on TikTok. I bought one of these. It was supposed to be a 3-in-1 peeler set that also did ribbons because I wanted to make my own coleslaw. And it just it takes forever doing it when I'm using a knife to get the right sort of thinness on the carrots and the red cabbage or whatever, or white cabbage, whichever you prefer for your own recipe. Yeah. I literally went to peel the first carrot and it broke. On the first carrot, it broke. So that was £9.90 plus postage down the drain.
Do you think the issue here might be TikTok shop?
It might be, yeah. It might be me for using it, to be fair. Yeah.
Simon, can you beat that?
Well, I was. You very kindly told me that you might be asking this question last night. So I was thinking about it, and then it landed in my lap today. I don't work on Thursdays because I have my kids, and which is why I never do this show normally. But went to the Trafford Centre, went to Sea Life, wasn't great. Went to the food court, ordered lunch off one of those big giant screens. It was chaos. Kids were running about. My mum acting like she'd never seen one of these screens before and everything. So just sort of kids were like, oh, yeah, I want that. And fine. Sat down. Food came. Four
what
children's meals arrived for 2 3-year-olds. They'd managed to sort of add on an extra two orders.
Excellent.
In my haze.
Did it all get eaten?
No. Well... Two of the meals got boxed up and used as their tea, so thrifty.
That one's too bad. If Donnarumma works out that good, I'd take it, to be honest with you.
Right, so no putting it off then. Brighton. Casey, we'll get to the panic stations in a second. Simon, were you there? Were you covering it?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like? Is it alarming that the way the game went?
I was very impressed for the first hour.
Yeah.
Like, really impressed. It was one of those games, you know, it was sort of like a bit back end of last season, but a bit kind of previous seasons where it feels like the other team is dangerous, but when you sort of boil it down to actually have they had any chances, the answer is no.
Yeah.
And they were really controlling the game. Certainly second half, it was like they were almost sort of queuing up to miss City, and you kind of think, well, there's only one way this is going.
And it went.
I'm not sure I've ever seen it before where just like substitutions happen and then the game just goes.
It was just like, I thought the whole game was very, very calm.
Yeah.
And then I can just imagine that's what, you know, back in the 1800s, seafaring men on the Pacific, where it goes from incredibly calm on the doldrums to then just sudden
thunderstorm.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the game felt like to me, because we just went from completely in control, very, very calm. You'd say a mature performance.
Yeah, definitely.
And then all of a sudden, just, yeah.
James Milner.
Typical City, yeah.
Yeah, that's a name from the past as well, isn't it? Like, out of nowhere. Like, I genuinely thought he'd retired.
How has he terrified the whole 11? Like, and Brian Gruder, which is... the Brighton team is full of kind of FM regens, isn't it? And, yeah, it was just bizarre.
Yeah. The thing is, Casey, like, as Simon's kind of alluded to there, the game doesn't get away from City if City take the chances. So you've got the last half hour that is not good, but you've got the first hour that is good. So where's the balance in how we should feel about this?
Well, I suppose you have to think, the obvious answer is it because they're lacking a pre-season? But then at the same time, is it also a hangover from last season being below par by Pep standards? So I don't think there's any particularly easy answer. But I think probably the substitution didn't help. I think even though I thought Bob played well, I think Bob was the one that should have come off and Marmoush should have stayed on. And I think it could have been a different game had that change not happened. But I suppose it's all if buts. And I know people were screaming at the time. I was getting loads of text messages going, why is Marmoush being taken off? Why is he being taken off? But I did think Bob was playing well. But it's just hard to explain. And I think we had this about 4 or 5 years ago, where any time we went behind, we just couldn't get it back. And then I think, was it a game away at West Ham where we suddenly got two goals back against them or something like that? And that seemed to flick a switch. So I just think, hopefully it's like one game where we manage to turn the tide, we'll just set them right mentally. I think that's probably the biggest hope.
There is an element to this as well, Simon, where, I mean, that, what KC's just said is an interesting point, because you hear Rodri's post-match interview where he talks about we're making stupid mistakes. You hear Doku's post-match where he says, you know, we go behind and he said something like the arms go down, but it's like English translation, heads go down, that sort of thing.
Well, he couldn't say heads go down because he never lifts his head, does he?
Well, aside from that. But it basically says, as soon as anything bad happens, that's it, we're done.
Yeah, I'm going to show I'm down with the kids and the here we go again meme. It's just kind of like...
What's the here we go again meme?
Oh God, maybe I've ruined it. It's from like, is it not from GTA?
Oh, that meme. Yes. Yeah.
Thanks. That's ruined now anyway, isn't it?
That more than a decade old game. Yeah.
Still a classic.
Yeah.
And, you know, asking Pep afterwards, like, why? What has happened? And he can't really explain it either. And it was, you know, I did say, like, is it legs or is it heads? And he was kind of like, we'll move on, thanks.
yes, it is.
the thing is, as well, in the press conference, he seemed very bullish, wasn't he? I think that sort of, like, G'd everyone up to think, oh, actually, maybe he's pretty confident for this weekend. And I suppose the first hour did show that. So I suppose he's a bit of at a loss as to what happened.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, because kind of he's entered the season with, like, and people say he's got so much enthusiasm, and then now suddenly the narrative is he's tired, he's leaving, like, he's leaving tomorrow. And so, well, he isn't, but he must be sort of very... It must be
wearing for him to have to, because you look at the teams that he's put out as well. The team that started at Brighton and the team that started against Spurs,
yeah,
it's very different to the team that was doing this last season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like calling Mateus Nunes out, because I get loads of grief for calling Mateus Nunes out. But
he is, he shouldn't be playing right back, so call him out all you want.
He makes inexplicable mistakes at right back.
Yeah, he's not a right back, is he?
No. Like, he's a decent player, but, like, he will do something like give the ball away when he shouldn't. He did it in the first half and Brighton nearly had a chance from it, and, like, gave the penalty away. And, like, you know, go back to the Spurs game and Trafford passing it.
But he does it even when he has good games, and it's simply because he's not a right back.
Yeah, so I think it's a combination of sort of people making silly mistakes and then heads drop and legs. Like, Rodri was gone by 55 minutes. Like, it didn't say a lot for Nico Gonzalez that Pep didn't think to bring him on at all. it seems to be like a perfect storm, and we talked about a perfect storm for about 4 months last season, and you would like to think it had been gone with 350 million spent, but it's not. And also, injuries are quite bad, can I just say. But yeah, it's just like, it felt like they were just swept away, and Diaz comes on at the end and Lewis come on, and they're just like, yeah, you're not having any impact, goodbye.
That's, I mean, the alarming thing, I guess, Casey, is Brighton basically went, all right then, we'll just stick a load of players forward because we don't think you've got any threat at the other end.
Well, as soon as the penalty happens, the whole ground got behind them, and they just went for the jugular. And momentum in games, no matter the best laid plans of mice and men, no matter what happens, momentum means everything in football. Like, you think the amount of times where, you know, teams get last minute winners and things like that, and people say it propels them to the title, but just momentum in games themselves can just, you know, flip on a dime. And I don't think there's a lot you can really do about it sometimes. And I know Pep's traditional solution to it is stop, be, you know, be patient, pass the ball around and stuff
slow
like
it down.
That.
Yeah.
But that's just not working at the moment.
And also, like, City are wasting the momentum. Like, they've not scored a second when they should have done after an hour. But, like, James Trafford makes an amazing save on 88 minutes. So how the hell is the ball in the net in the 89th?
Yeah.
Like, City should use that to then go on and see out the draw.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Yeah.
Can I be a bit of a nerd for the laws of the game? Because, like, I honestly think the new 8-second rule changes a lot of things in this game. And we talked about momentum, and we've talked about City not taking advantage of it. You also, Casey, you made the point, as soon as the penalty goes in, the Amex is up and the everybody's behind them. Trafford will know full well, I can't give away a stupid corner. I can't hang on to this for too long. So if I give away a corner, then the tails are up and it's cheap. They might get a chance from it. So when he's got the ball on 88, 89 minutes, whenever it was, and he's got no options, he's got one thing he can do, and that's boot it long. And suddenly Brighton have got it back and their tails are up again.
Well, he especially had to boot it long after the Spurs game as well, because nobody was showing for him in the Spurs game. Like, you know, when you see some of the clips from behind the ball, like, Gonzalez may have well been hiding behind his man and there was no options and he was trying to play it out. That's obviously got in his head where he's like, right, I do need to, I'll just go long, man.
I need to get rid of it. Like, time's up, referee's arms in the air.
I don't think that happens if the Spurs game doesn't happen either. And I just think there's just knock-on effects all over the show from different situations at the minute.
There was definitely a point, I don't know if it was that point, but a point late on in the game where the crowd were really on his back because it was approaching 8 seconds, as if to say, like, this should be a corner.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I think it's changing the game, and I think it's interesting how it's going to do it, because I like, we'll get into it a bit later on with Donnarumma and how City will build up, but I think it is changing how teams will play out from the back. I mean, last season, KC, when Brighton brought on their substitutes and changed the game, like, it changed because City didn't have the energy in the final minutes of the game to keep it going. Are you concerned this year because City should have the energy? They've got the players fit, they've got new players in there, and yet Brighton did exactly the same thing, brought a lot of energy off the bench and won the game.
Not this early in the season, I'm not concerned, no, because of the way the weird, you know, the Football Club World Cup, FIFA Club World Cup, whatever you call it, that nonsense competition.
Wouldn't have been nonsense if we'd won it, mate.
Yeah, no, it would have been. But yeah, no, it's just more a case of, because of the way that the back end of last season happened, the way that you literally had no pre-season whatsoever, I don't necessarily think it's an excuse of, oh, they aren't fit, they've not had time to do it. I just think that the players seem completely out of rhythm because they're not used to doing that. And I think it's just a bit of a strange situation for them to get their heads around at the minute.
Are they out of rhythm with each other as well? Because I mean, you look at the number of I'm going to say Premier League winners, but, like, what I mean is, like, traditional City players in there, the ones that have been there most of the time. Most of that team's new.
Well, it's more, for me, it's more so the fact that where are they? And it's in the centre of the pitch. Rodri's coming back from, you know, a horrendous injury. He's clearly not fit. And then you've got, you know, whoever then playing, like, you know, Reinders is getting used to the new position. If Gonzalez has been playing there, I know he's been here a while, but he's not had that much game time since he signed. So I think it's a culmination of multiple different things.
Yeah, and you've got, like, in the defence as well there, like, you think of, I know we can't keep comparing to teams gone by, but the treble team, like,
yeah,
four centre-backs across the back four who would just go, right, nothing's getting past me today. And yeah, that's not really what the back four is anymore.
One thing I would like to say, because I am seeing a lot of this about, like, so 17-18, fine, like, that team was immense throughout. Treble team was rubbish in January, February, sort of pulling through by its fingernails March and April, and then really turns it on. Like, they lost to Nathan Jones's Southampton. So, yeah, they were amazing for, like, 3 months at the end of the season, but, like, there were a lot of times that season where they weren't, even, like, the team the season after. So I don't think you can get too carried away about this team as it stands right now, because I think they will get a lot better. Yeah,
because I think what seemed to help then as well was the change in being able to play Champions League games and getting the heads and their environments changed a little bit. That seemed to help with the form.
Yeah.
Will the international break out with that? But if Rodri's going to play 180 minutes for Spain, I doubt it. But
what I would say is, like, the transfer window has been a joke, or City have handled it a joke. Like, I was sat there at Brighton thinking, like, well, Edison's here, and Gundogan's here, and Akanji's here, and
they might not be here tomorrow.
And Ortega's here. Not only might they not be here tomorrow, but, like, they're supposed to be sorting moves to Turkey. Like, it takes 4 hours to get to Turkey, and then it probably takes another 4 hours to get from the airport into actual Istanbul, because it's, like,
miles away.
Yeah. So, what are they? Why are they here? Like, it can't have been helpful for Trafford to have Edison sat on the bench for two out of the three games. It can't have been helpful for the squad that they know all these players are here that are basically off. So there's loads of mishmash things going on, and it doesn't help that Kusunov gets injured towards the end of the game and has to come off, and Diaz has to sort of walk into this. And the chaos of the transfer window, I think, has just kind of engulfed them a little bit in the last few games.
Good to have some time away from it all then, I guess, maybe. just like Guardiola can come in and go, look, you're not on international duty. Go away for 4 days. Disappear.
That's without even mentioning the hokey-cokey of Savinho, whether he's in or out or not, isn't it? So,
yeah. I want to touch on the creativity side of things as well, because, Casey, you talked about Bob and Marmoush and the options on the wings. I'm interested, why do you think so much was happening-ish, like, when the game, in the first hour, but then as soon as it goes to 1-1, nothing happens? There's just no creativity in that front line at all.
I just don't think the ball was sticking. And if the ball's not sticking and your midfield's completely off the pace, there's not a lot your forwards can really do.
Just come straight back.
Yeah. I think it's partly as well they're getting used to how to play as well. Like, I was speaking to Gaz the other day, and Gaz was saying Marmoush has kind of got this thing with Pep where he's on the pitch in the same way that Alvarez was. He's not really figured out where to play him yet. He just has to have him on the pitch as a goal threat. And I think once he figures out where Marmoush's best position is, I think it'll be, 4-4-2 or as close to it as possible. I think that'll be the way forward, but... Yeah, it's just, I think there's just a culmination of so many different things. But yeah, Haaland's big and strong, but he doesn't hold the ball up, really. That's not his game. His game is running in behind when it's stuff like that. And when the players can't find him, not a lot's going to happen, is it, really?
Yeah. When in the stadium, Simon, was there a sense of, like, ultimately they can't do anything as soon as they've got the ball? I mean, there was a moment in the, I think it was in the first half, where Marmoush is breaking, and I remember watching on the TV, how has he not even tried to find Oscar Bob? There was a break where he just kept it.
Yeah.
And it felt like Bob was running completely clear on the right hand side. Didn't try and play it through. And it's just like those little bits of understanding, those moments.
Yeah, so Marmoush plays the ball through for Haaland when Haaland should score in the first half. He can't get out of his feet. But I'm just not having Marmoush on the left. He just, like...
He did play that unbelievable ball to Bob, though, didn't he? Where Bob just
didn't quite get there.
Well, Bob didn't gamble. Bob should have been on the end of that and tapping it in, but he didn't gamble.
Yeah. I just, like, I have to do ratings every week, and the first word that springs to mind with Marmoush is lively. And then you think, what's he actually done with it, though? And it's kind of like Doku levels of, like...
Oh, come on, he's not that bad.
but this is, it's this not a problem. You've got, you like, Doku, Lively doesn't really create a lot. Savinio, Lively doesn't really create a lot. Yeah, Marmoush, Lively.
But also, like, Marmoush has been Lively without creating a lot for two games. Both games, Doku has come on for him and done nothing. Like, where... You can't have Savinio because he's injured. You can't have Foden because he's...
There were some nice air quotes there from
Simon. I was just about to say, lovely set of bunny ears.
Didn't quite get picked up on the recording.
It's just nice that he's training again now. But it's that thing, like, they've not got that competition at the minute. You can't say, oh, you know... It's where you do compare to the great City teams, it's like, yeah, you could score a hat-trick and be out of the team for the next game, whereas now it's like you can not create in 10 games and still be there because no one else is either there
Who's
or
coming
doing
in?
It. Yeah.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Was it interesting to see Nico O'Reilly instead of Nico Gonzalez?
Yes. Yeah. Precisely because Rodri just looked done. Like, and Gonzalez, I don't think, has been that bad in the first two games.
I thought he was awful against Spurs.
Like, yeah.
I suppose that, so where I sit behind the ground, like, so I'm behind the goalie in the south stand, and you can see when you're behind Trafford, he's literally, like, Gonzalez is literally nowhere, like, he's literally behind his man on every occasion, and that probably doesn't come up on TV or highlights that much, but you just think he may as well have been playing a game of hide and seek.
Yeah.
And I was really, really impressed with him at that Newcastle game. But you just think, that Newcastle game was a long time ago. He's barely been able to get into the team since. So what is going on with him?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, he's not a six, fundamentally.
Yeah.
But he's kind of the best six that they've got when Rodri's goosed, which in the second half against Brighton he was.
Mm.
So, like, why did Brighton suddenly start streaming past every City player? Well...
Because Rodri's legs didn't have any more energy.
He was sort of like buried in the sand, and they were just sort of going past him at will.
Yeah. A City lacking physicality, Simon?
Well, Gonzalez, funnily enough, is someone who does seem to add it. Like, he's a weird character, isn't he? Or he's had a weird background of coming through La Masia at Barcelona and then going to Sergio Conceição's Porto. And he seems a lot more Conceição than Barcelona at the minute, throwing himself about. But it's just really hard to pin down what is wrong with the City team, because it feels like legs and heads and brains are different times across the 90, really, that all contribute to...
It's like those, you see them, like, is it the, like, the pyramid of like, what you, like, you can have something that is, you can have it quick, but you can't have it like, cheap and good quality.
I'm glad that's where you were going, because as soon as you said pyramid and started putting your hand in the air, I was thinking about the food pyramid. I was like, where's he going here?
Yeah, you can have like cheap and quick, but it won't be good quality. Yeah, cheap and good quality, but it won't be quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Legs and heads, but no brains. Yeah. Brains and heads, but no legs. And you carry on like that. Yeah, yeah. It's It's just a really confusing time for the team, I think.
Yeah, yeah. How much of it, I mean, this is a bigger question than I was expecting really at this moment, but how much of it is because they've done so well? Like, they've just been imperious for 8 years, barring one season.
A lot of the players there haven't, though. And the players that we're talking about haven't. Like, the ones that were saying the issues, you know, obviously, Rodri's legs aside.
Yeah, but it is really hard to replace that.
Oh, of course it is, and that's no doubting, but you'd have to say that goes back to Simon's point about not... Well, I know Simon was talking about this window specifically, but I think we completely took our foot off the gas when it came to transfers after the treble, and we've not really recovered from it, have we?
I think Casey pretty much bang on. Like, it's up to the new players to come in, and City, you know... through Cheeky Bagirison and now Hugo Viana have continued to buy players who are in this kind of up-and-coming, young, hungry market who should be, like, City is the next step up for them or several steps up for them, and they should be champing at the bit to go out and win a Premier League title and make a name for themselves. And it doesn't feel like enough of them.
They look a bit scared, don't they? Some of
yeah,
them.
Or just disorganised, or, you know, they've not got everything together. And they've not walked into sort of, you know, stability, but they've got to do more. And, you know, Haaland has to do more. If he takes his chances against Brighton, then they win over and things like that. So it's just, yeah, not enough players are stepping up.
Hmm. Ultimately, though, Casey, it was moments that lost that game for them. It was Matthias Nunes sticking his arms in the air. It was, you know, a counter-attack.
Yeah, Nunes' moment or whatever was completely mental, but he's done it several times before. So, yeah, if you are continuing to play him at right-back, like, right-back is the new left-back, isn't it? We didn't sign a left-back for donkey's years, and now we clearly need a right-back. Although I thought Lewis did very well against Wolves, we clearly need a right-back. And yet we've signed everyone but a right back. It's just a mental transfer window to keep coming back to it. I just don't understand the logic there whatsoever.
Well, we'll come back to the transfer window because it has now closed, and there are a lot of questions, as we talked about what City might aim to do this season, especially with the deals surrounding the goalkeepers. Edison has gone. Gianluigi Donnarumma has come in. He was told by PSG that he was surplus to requirements, as Luis Enrique wanted to go in a different direction. What does that mean for the way that City will build up this season? I've been speaking to The Athletic's John McKenzie about it all.
Obviously, Edison's one of the best on-ball goalkeepers in the world, so that's what they're leading. And that won't be replaced by Donnarumma. But I guess my instinct immediately is to start thinking, right, what is it about the trends in world football that have led to this kind of transfer happening, right? Presumably letting Edison go and bringing in someone like Donnarumma in terms of what they offer as a profile means that there's something going on here beyond sort of like-for-like replacements. I don't think that the club will be bringing in Donnarumma expecting him to replicate the sorts of things that Edison is doing. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm having to rack my brains a little bit, because I think that the temptation here is always to think, oh, the club must know what they're doing to do this kind of thing. So what have they seen in the tea leaves of modern football to want to go in this direction? I don't think that's necessarily always true. I think sometimes clubs do make these kind of decisions and then they can look poor in hindsight. I guess Man City have the example of like Calvin Phillips as someone who's right there, who you could argue, I know there's a lot of people who like to say, you know, the club have decided to do this, Guardiola's decided to do this, the coaching staff are on board, therefore there can be no argument that this isn't the right thing to do. It could potentially be a bad decision, but I think that there will be some kind of maybe deeper argument going on about where the future is going, and that future is going to be what is the future of build up? What is the future of in at the elite game at the Premier League level? What do we need our goalkeepers to do in order to sustainably achieve the things we want to do in possession? And I think that's the question we sort of have to dig into a bit today in answering the question about why go for Donnarumma. After as a replacement for Edison.
How much has Edison affected what the Premier League does in terms of build-up? Because you look at certainly the sort of upper mid-table teams now, your teams like Brighton and Bournemouth and those sorts that always seem to bloody the nose of the top-end teams these days. It almost feels now that if you want to have some sort of progressive play and play a possession style game with progressive build up, you have to have a goalkeeper that is part of that. You can't do it with your traditional shot stopper.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to what we were talking about before. When you're talking about build up, I think people fall into the trap of thinking about build up in ideological ways a lot of the time, right? Which is build up is just, you know, passing it around a lot on the back, and often that can be like seemingly needless, and it can go wrong, and when it goes wrong it's embarrassing and bad, and you're like, you've shot yourself in the foot. But if you break down what you want your goalkeeper to do in build-up, it simply is to start the play going. I mean, the Spanish speaking sides call build-up like la salida, right? The exit. And that's all it is, right? It's you exiting from the position where you have to restart the game with the goalkeeper and getting the ball into another situation. There's plenty of different ways you can do that. There's plenty of different ways that teams are trying to do that in the Premier League. And I agree with you, like, obviously in the post Pep Guardiola sort of high era received wisdom, people were thinking in terms of, you know, positional play, like moving the ball through the first few thirds in order to arrive at the final third in a very particular way. But I think we're a long way away from that now. There's a lot of teams who don't really worry too much about, I guess, what you would call a clean exit approach to build up, which is you want to retain possession. You want to possess the ball in certain areas that allow you to arrive in the final third in a certain way. I think we're moving away from that. Even teams like, I think Liverpool are really interesting in this respect. I think if we learned anything from the Liverpool-Arsenal game at the weekend, it's that for Liverpool, build up for them is moving from unsettled possession. So that's the goalkeeper or one of the centre backs having to kick the ball off from the 6 yard line into settled possession, which is the back line have the ball and they're able to move the ball around that back line and decide when the moment is going to be, when they're going to trigger their passes forward into space that the teammates are creating, right? So build up then becomes about possessing the ball in deeper areas, allowing your team the space and time to generate favorable attacking conditions. That's very different, I think, from what Guardiola would have been wanting to do, you know, 10 years ago, where it was more about positional play, right? It was like working your way through opposition blocks, finding pockets of space, moving the ball through lines of pressure, and eventually either playing through the block and generating attacks in that way, or forcing the opponent back until you've got territorial advantage, right, where you've squeezed the opponent into the penalty box, and then you work on breaking down that low block, however you have to do it. So yeah, I think that we are moving into a world where that Guardiola reality of using positional play to basically dominate possession and force teams essentially into doing exactly what you want has gone away. Teams are now way more man-to-man focused, and the reason why they are man-to-man focused is because of Guardiola basically making zonal, like passive zonal systems redundant. So the big question I think going forward is like, what does this man-to-man reality look like? Because it's not about finding pockets of space in zonal structures anymore. It's about when you're building up, you're trying to generate separation from your marker. And that's a very different kettle of fish for a build-up situation. If you watch Premier League games these days, most weekends what you'll see is a lot of the time teams working around the back and then trying to play it into space in the middle, and the ball receiver having the opponent who's marking them just go right through the back of them. Happens over and over again. The good example from the weekend is Virgil van Dijk going through the back of Zubimendi to win the ball high up against Arsenal. That's the reality, is that now the out of possession landscape has changed so that the in possession landscape has to follow suit. And that following suit is how do we generate separation from play. It's very hard to do, which is why a lot of teams now are now way more likely to go long, go direct.
I think the directness thing is interesting though, because like in terms of what Edison can provide, his direct kicking is so different to so many other goalkeepers. It's so much flatter and so much more, mm-hmm. kind of delivers it with so much more kind of like directness, if that's if that's the best way to say it, because it doesn't float its way down the pitch. It kind of it's driven just overhead height to Haaland or to whoever. And that'll be a big weapon for City to lose then, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's worth saying that, you know, with... I mean, this goal's been scored this season by City. One of the Wolves goals, was it the third goal where Reinders recycles the ball back, ends up back at Trafford, and they baited the press forward, and then Trafford goes direct to... I can't remember who he goes direct to. Maybe Oscar Bob.
It was back to Reinders, yeah.
It was back to Reinders, was it? Yeah. And then they ran the option down the channel, didn't they? And then it culminated in the cutback to Haaland. But I think that's definitely true. And, you know, that's the reality that the world where teams are going to aggressively man-mark you is leading to. And that idea is that if you can then bait the opponent forward, because they are going to be man-to-man, so you can manipulate their position, then you are going to create space in behind and you're going to produce 1v1s generally. And, you know, if you've got a player like Haaland, we saw it against Chelsea in a number of the games that you played against them last season where because Chelsea were going man-to-man, you were just able to isolate Haaland against, it was Trevor Chalobah in the second game. And then the ball, you just play a ball in long, get him on the right side of the momentum and you can generate from there. So that, there's definitely that option. But I do think that we are seeing more teams potentially moving in the direction of what Liverpool are doing, which is not wanting to go direct, like not wanting to be forced into playing those long balls. Because I think as soon as you're forced into playing those long balls, that's when you start introducing the element of like, perhaps this is easier for the opposition to actually win the ball back. And then that lack of control, I suppose, results in turnovers of the ball more frequently. And that's, again, the Liverpool-Arsenal game is a good example of that, because in the first half, Arsenal were able to press Liverpool quite aggressively and were able to force them to not being able to move out of their own third and then forcing them into these long balls they didn't really want to play. And I think when you do that, you do lose a bit of control that you can get from actually having more settled possession and then finding those gaps and generating favourable conditions to play forward into. And I wonder whether or not Guardiola is thinking in those terms. Because it's tempting, I think, to think of Guardiola having two options, one of which is like, let's try and double down on build up and do the stuff that we used to do so well, which doesn't seem to be working at the moment. Or then going directly long, right? Those are the two options: sit deep, try and build up, or go long. What if there's like a secret third way where you can do what Liverpool are doing, right? Which is use your build up as your early build up as a way of getting settled possession and then deciding what to do from there. At the moment, I think that depends on what teams are willing to do to you. So with Arsenal pressing and having good access to Liverpool in the first half this weekend, Liverpool weren't able to do that. And what they actually did in the second half was they emptied out their build-up. The temptation is to overload in your build-up, right? Because then you'll have more players than the opponent, easier to keep the ball. But actually what that did is it just gave Arsenal easier access to all of the best, I guess, the best technical players that Liverpool have in terms of build-up. What they did in the second half was they pushed players forward, so they pushed the fullbacks up, they pushed one of the midfielders high, and then had Gravenberch dropping out further away from his marker. It created a huge amount of space, and it's a scary thing to do, because like if you lose the ball in that situation, then
you're in trouble.
But what it does do then is that it does two things, one of which is it makes it much easier for you to actually generate that first level of possession, that settled possession that you need. But it also gets more of your players forward, so that if you are forced to go long into these risky scenarios, you're better structured for counter presses as well. So I wonder if that's maybe the direction we're moving in, which is almost like a much more efficient form of build-up, where it's like we're not going to try and hold the ball in intricate ways and work the ball through lines of pressure like we talked about before. This is simply about getting the ball under control out of a restart situation and then generating the ability to get the ball forward into areas where you can be dangerous. Doesn't feel very Pep Guardiola, but it's the way that modern football is going. And we've had enough interviews with Guardiola in the last year or so where he's talked about the reality of modern football changing, that maybe he is going to try and evolve his style a little bit.
Yeah, I'm interested how that kind of fits with City's transfer business, not just this summer, but kind of certainly since they won the treble in 2023. There's been a lot of criticism from City fans that they haven't really strengthened from a position of strength. They haven't done what Liverpool have done this summer, basically, and gone out there, got the best players for the positions that they could have done. And you look at the kind of the profile of player that City have signed in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a lot of ball carriers, a lot of risk takers. When you think of what a traditional Guardiola signing would be, it would be someone who's good in the small spaces, someone who's good in keeping possession and can kind of work those openings like a lot higher up the pitch and keep things settled. What do you make of City's transfer business over the last few years in that regard? You look at players like Ryan Cherki recently for this summer, who is, I mean, sadly injured for the next couple of months anyway, but so we won't see too much of him. But you've got players like him and that going back a couple of years, Jeremy Doku, Savinho, players that kind of are much more inclined to carry the ball.
I think the really interesting thing about the ball carriers is that he's brought in loads more players in central areas to do the ball carrying stuff, right? So Kovacic was brought in with that mindset. I think Mateus Nunes was brought in with that mindset and it hasn't worked out. Tijani Reinders is another example of a player who can carry in the central spaces. I think all of this boils down to what we've been talking about, right? It's the reality of in possession play has changed. There's fewer like small spaces players because teams are not being able to sort of generate those small space scenarios because you're constantly being man-marked, right? So you don't find pockets because those pockets are now no longer almost an issue. So I think that all of this is to say that what we said before about Guardiola being aware of the reality of modern football is true. I think he recognized this 2 seasons ago and was already trying to make changes on the basis of that. But I think for me, perhaps the bigger question is maybe the physicality aspect, because I feel as though everyone in the Premier League now has just gone massive, and you know, it's easy to do that, right? When the reality is that you're going to do a lot of man-to-man out of possession stuff, everything then becomes about duels. It doesn't matter how good you are as a technical player if your opponent can get close enough to you. And I know,
clump you in the air.
Yeah, right. I've spoken to Premier League coaches in the last week where they say you can coach this stuff as well, right? It's like you coach either win the tackle or you kill the player, basically. So you're going in there and you're either going to win a foul or win the ball. It doesn't matter how technical you are as a player in that reality. Like you're going to lose every time almost. And that's why, as we said before, generating separation is a really good way of doing that. One way of generating separation is through ball carrying. So that's why I think Guardiola was aware of the fact that, look, what we need to have is not just players who can pass through lines of pressure, but players who can break through lines of pressure and then carry the ball. Because if you're in a man-to-man world, then that means that someone in the, you know, marking behind the first few lines of pressure has to break with their marking responsibility to then cover the player who's now free. But yeah, I just feel as though like a lot of the players that City have now are just not at that level where when it comes to dueling, they're up to snuff. So I don't know. I feel like, you know, you've got Doku on one side. You've got Ryan Aitnouri behind him. We saw against Wolves that channel was being targeted for definite. And yeah, you know, Rico Lewis as a fullback, etc. And look, these are all players who I love. I think they're all brilliant technical players. But the reality is that when you're,
they can get knocked around. Yeah.
When you're playing in that man-to-man reality, you're going to get stomped every once in a while. And right now, it doesn't feel as though you're getting the trade-off in the in-possession side of things to justify the out-of-possession like flimsiness that sometimes seems to be there. So yeah, I think for me, that's the big question with City's recruitment is it doesn't feel like they've really gone for a really, you know, physically elite option. Even the centre-backs don't feel particularly physically dominant these days. You've got Stones in there, and then I guess Diaz is the more physically dominant option. But beyond that, like, where are the players? You've got Rodri, who's coming back from injury. But beyond that, like, it's a very lightweight midfield. If you're playing Silva and Reinders, add in Foden to that, add in Cherki to that, and then you've got Haaland up front. where's the dueling physicality outside of that? So maybe that's the next step that City need to take, is to just accepting that you've got to have dual winners in the team. But as things stand right now, I just don't think that leaning into sort of technicality on its own is going to be enough to save them from this.
Yeah. So just finally then, John, with the view of Donnarumma coming in to replace Edison, is that perhaps step one in that kind of new look build-up era, in that you don't have the goalkeeper necessarily being as much a part of it as he used to be?
Yeah, it's hard to know, because I still think that the goalkeeper, the technicality of the goalkeeper is always going to be important for what you can achieve. It's worth saying that this is all contextualized by the fact that Donnarumma has just won the Champions League with PSG, who are the most technical team in the world right now. And again, all of this stuff I've just been talking about with respect to dual winners, PSG are just like, you know, they don't have a ton of dual winners in that team. Like, their midfield is as flimsy as any that you'll see, right? So that's all by way of, I think, context. That I think there is potentially a way of being able to play in a technical team like this for Donnarumma that works out. And, you know, interestingly, both PSG struggled against both Chelsea and Spurs when both of those teams went pretty physical on them in certain phases, and they went man to man and they went aggressive attacking in behind, right? That's what you do against City. And I think as well, you know, you could make the argument that PSG is the next logical evolution of like Pep's positional play in the modern age. So those are still the same issues that Pep and City are experiencing now is the same issues that PSG are experiencing as well. So that's one thing. I still think you need to have your goalkeeper to have a level of technicality, right? In order, if what I'm saying is true about like you want to get from unsettled possession into settled possession, you still need your goalkeeper to be good enough to be able to do that. But I do think that, yeah, I think maybe the emphasis is going to be like, we're not going to try and possess the ball deep a lot in the way that we used to, right? Which was about baiting presses up and then finding ways through the press. I think it's going to be a lot more about just getting to a situation where either you generate your settled possession or you then go long when you can't, with the idea being that hopefully the opponent will have committed a lot of players forward, so there's a lot of spaces to attack. But the short answer to all of this is I don't know what they're thinking. It seems like a weird transfer to me. That shouldn't be worrying for City, because like I'm just a guy. But like I think there's a lot of people out there who are like, it is kind of hard to sort of deep what's going on in this situation. And I guess it remains to be seen what will happen from it.
Be fascinating though to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and the one final thing, like Donnarumma, obviously very good shot stopper in recent months. I think he had a really good run, obviously, in the Champions League as well. City conceding a lot of big chances. So, and you know, they've gone for Trafford, they've gone for Donnarumma. It does suggest that they're sort of rejigging the balance to make sure their goalkeepers are going to be first and foremost good at shot stopping. So it could be as simple as that potentially as well.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
That was John McKenzie talking to me about how City might change this season. We're going to focus a little bit more on the transfer window now. We've kind of, I was going to say skirted around it, but we haven't. We've kind of bulldozed right through it already once in the show. In came Ryan Aitnori, Marcus Bettinelli, Cherki, Reinders, Trafford, Donnarumma. Out went De Bruyne, Carson Walker, Hayes, McAtee, Grealish, Echeverry, Edison, Akanji, Gundogan. Simon, how do you rate it?
Is it just me that finds the goalkeeping situation completely mad? Like,
no.
Not necessarily Edison, Donnarumma, but like switching out 3 keepers for 3 new keepers Ortega being told to find a new club and then he's still there and he's in the Champions League. They've got four keepers now. Mm. Bettinelli hasn't been seen since he signed.
Well, Bettinelli's a really funny one, because when they signed him, I thought, oh, this is pro. Like, in my mind, he feels about 19.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, what? Because was he like a young? He was young at Fulham, was he?
I don't know.
He did get in one England squad, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he might have done. In my mind, he was like a third keeper that was a youngster. And then, like, he's like 33, 34.
Is he that old?
Yeah.
But it's like they've signed him and he's like they've discovered he's allergic to Moonbeam or something and, like, has to stay away from the training ground. He's not been... Yeah.
I still think Nicky Weaver can do a job in that position, no matter what age he is.
He hasn't got any knees, mate.
it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah. But then, like, everything else as well. Because, like, Simon, you talked about deadline day and the number of players that were leaving that were at Brighton.
I think everyone before the Club World Cup thought, yeah, very good. Like, they brought players in. They've signed a left-back. Reinders looks great. There was initial kind of disappointment that they didn't get Verts, and then Cherki signed, and Cherki kind of did something in the Nations League and everyone thought, right, he's a bargain compared to Verts. And and then I think they've just made a mess of the departures, or the departures have been a mess. And that has upset them in the last few weeks with...
Balance-wise or...?
Just kind of everything. The environment, I don't think, has been great. Mm. And I was struck by what the great Jack Gorn wrote the other week, that was like, because this window has been compared to 2017, and he said in 2017 City had 5 of the 10 most expensive transfers in England, with Walker and people like that, and now they have 1, which is Grealish. So it's kind of like,
and he's at Everton.
Are City kind of being outgunned by your Liverpools and Arsenals and things like that?
With some of it, though, do you think it's them trying to be too cute?
Well, potentially. Like,
they've always done that, though.
I don't think it's that the money isn't there.
No.
I think it's them, we've been smart before in the transfer window. We can be even smarter now.
Like, I've no clue how it will go, and I'm not saying Cherki's worse than Verts or whatever, but I think kind of Verts at his price was a high price. But, like, Bernardo Silva at 40 million in 2017, after he's just got Monaco to Champions League semis, like, I think that would be a similar bracket of signing. Mm. And it's that kind of thing where City have kind of stepped away from the more expensive transfers and say, oh, no, we're not going to do those. And it's like, right, but if
you need to pull the trigger on one every now and again.
If people that aren't Man United have started to do that, like, you might actually be in trouble.
Mm. Yeah. The other side, though, KC, and I can never get away from this point, is that the number of times City have signed players in the post-takeover era where they've been not a superstar and they've become a superstar at City.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I think, like, you wouldn't have said Wirtz as a superstar to
use those terms. Yeah.
Like, so Simon makes a good point that Bernardo wasn't a superstar, but clearly had the ability to be one, and Wirtz would be in that bracket.
Because David Silva, Yaya Toure, they weren't, like, they were known entities, superstars.
Nobody would have had, you know, I know Reinders looks a good player and Cherki does as well, but, you know, nobody would have been having Gonzalez or Doku in that bracket whatsoever. Nobody was talking about them beforehand, were they?
And no, and they still have the potential to be. Doku could be. Savinho could be.
Diaz was third choice that summer.
Maybe further down the pecking order.
Diaz works out amazingly. It's been a phenomenal hit rate, like, of all the transfers they made. But, like Casey says, for the last 3 years, like, can you name one? Guardiol, but...
Yeah, Guardiol. Yeah,
Guardiol's missed all of this season.
Injured so far.
Which hasn't helped. So, I just...
But again, Guardiol felt like one where they nailed it down, we want him, and they pulled the trigger on, and that's the one that they've got right. They've not had that with any this year, I don't think.
No, well, but it's just the mood music as well, because I think pre-Club World Cup, the the feeling was very much, yeah, we've signed these players and we've done it for only 100 million and this has been great. And then Trafford signs and fine. And
then one Al Hilal game later.
Yeah, yeah. But I think Liverpool have been quite game changey because it is, you know, I mean, Liverpool spending money, but like spending that much money and adding...
And Chelsea as well.
Yeah, but like adding Isak to that title winning team. And Verts and things like that.
And, you know, only just missing out on Guehi as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, City have gone about it their way and they will continue to go about it their way. But there are now more questions being asked about their way.
Mm, yeah. The other side of all of this, KC, is you look at those outgoings. There's a lot there. They've had to trim this squad down.
Yeah, and they needed to from an age perspective, as well as from, you know, a numerical perspective.
I don't think we mentioned it actually, but wasn't the Brighton team the youngest City team or the Spurs team the youngest City team
Spurs
for
team
like
was,
15 years or something? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But that's, you know, you'd like to think that's a good thing to stand us instead for, you know, post Guardiola when that comes. But yeah, I think it needed to be done. But to go back to what Simon was talking about earlier, it needed to be done earlier in the window. You think, you know, for them haggling over a few quid or whatever, they didn't end up getting whatever few quid because the outgoings were still for peanuts anyway, really, weren't they?
Hmm.
So that hanging on and hanging on and hanging on for the sake of, you know, an extra, what, maybe million or two here or there has done, you know, detrimental value. And again, that comes down to the, you know, when I'm saying things like this, it's like from a complete outsider perspective, it's like it does seem that they're just trying to be too clever at times. I don't have, you know, an arse of a clue of what actually is going on. That just seems what it is from the sidelines. And it just seems they've been trying to be too clever with the incomings and the outgoings.
Mm.
And it, like you say with Liverpool and Chelsea, like Chelsea selling Jackson for 70 million or something.
Yeah.
And Liverpool have brought in a hell of a lot of money this summer. This is like, that is what City have done for the past 5-10 years. They've spent a lot, but they've brought in a lot. I mean,
for the last few years, they've brought in a lot and not spent a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But this season, this summer, kind of, they've spent £175 million. It's not 10p, but like they've spent less than most of their rivals, but also like, they've not brought in that much money and they've not brought in the money they thought they would. Like McAtee, they wanted like 40 million for and they got 25. Even like your Maximo Peroni, they wanted 30 and they got 12 or something like that. So like it's not been a great window for selling. And I just think, yeah, with like Edison and Akanji and things like that, I think they just needed to sort it earlier in the window.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of all of that, Calvin Phillips is still there. Stefan Ortega is still there.
Well, I did want to bring up Calvin Phillips when you said, you know, best option as a six in the club earlier on, but, you know.
Is the loan window still open for the Championship? Are we going to end up seeing Calvin Phillips disappearing off to, I don't know, Preston North End?
It's very hard to think of sort of... I can't imagine who would want to take him.
We need a Michael Owen brochure for him, don't we?
Yeah.
Former England Player of the Year.
I feel really bad for him. I feel really bad for him.
Yeah,
because why wouldn't you, like, in the time when City signed him? Why wouldn't you take you? Why wouldn't you leave Leeds to come to City if you thought like you back yourself to do that? And then this is where it's gone.
It's just very, very strange because it wasn't like he signed him and everyone was like, "Why have they signed him?"
Mm.
It's all gone. All gone downhill very fast and very sharply.
Yeah. James got in touch on Instagram because I put a story up asking for any listener questions on there. And he basically sent us one back, KC, that says, "Is Hugo Viana a chaos merchant?"
I don't think so. I've been bitching and moaning like an old biddy on a bus here, but about the transfer window. But I think, you know, it's his first window, really, isn't it? And like to go back to what we've been saying, there's been a few bad windows in a row now. You can't just blame Viana for that, can you? Or can you?
I think James can.
Yeah. Well, you're wrong, James.
I've had a chaotic summer. It's felt like more chaos this summer than previous summers. in terms of just, well, everything, every part of the transfers this summer has felt wild, even down to deadline day with players not expecting to go and then suddenly go in. And
even a deadline day signing, says he don't tend to do that either.
No.
I know obviously it's like rumours and stuff like that, but like, hasn't there been involvement from more than just Viana in the background with transfers this year, whereas Cheeky had complete control? Doesn't it seem, well, doesn't it, again, you know, from the sidelines looking in, it does seem to be too many cooks spoil the broth with...
I haven't heard any of this, so Simon.
No, I haven't heard that, to be fair.
Yeah, what it seems to be is, because Viana's new in the role, it seems to be that other board members or executives, let's say, seem to be chucking their top.
This way, Hugo, I'll show you how.
I could be talking bollocks. Like,
Soriano's always involved himself and been pretty useful. I think Viana has to kind of take responsibility for the window. He sort of came in. He made quite a few. He had an influence on the January window, even when Cheeky was still here. So
I mean, by the sounds of the reports, Cheeky was here in name only. He was like, "I'm retiring. This is over to you."
Yeah. I still think he was important in some deals. And like Cherky, I think, for instance, is one that he was very much involved in. But Viana is, I would place Viana as kind of the
important cog in all of this.
The biggest cog by far. Yeah.
Well, that's a worry, considering on paper you would say that Cherky's probably the best deal we've done this summer.
Yeah. Or maybe Reinders.
No, I think Reinders. I think Reinders will be a better player. But in terms of a deal on paper, you know, potential to transfer fee ratio, Cherky on paper looks like the best deal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we've got this far. It's goalkeeper time. Trafford coming in suddenly out of nowhere, he's number one. We thought Edison was staying, and you know, Trafford would be number two, Edison number one. Suddenly, Trafford starts the season, and then Donnarumma arrives. Simon, John's just spoken about how Donnarumma does and doesn't fit, and it's going to be a big change with how City play. Ortega's still here. We've talked about it. What's your gut instincts for how this looks now going forward?
Well, Donnarumma in goal, basically. I think Trafford will get the games that he would have got anyway. Like,
had Edison stayed.
Yeah, I think he'll get the cup games, but whether he gets kind of like, you know, Ortega started getting some Champions League games and things like that.
And one at Anfield for some reason last season.
well, last season, and particularly that one at Anfield, I would say Pep said, well, we are going to get battered.
We're not going to be able to
Liverpool are going to take shot after shot after shot at us.
And Edison loses his head at Anfield far too often.
Yeah. So we need a shot stopper. And I think Pep pivoted to that kind of for those maybe like 6 weeks. We said, you know what, what Edison gives us isn't kind of beneficial or as beneficial for the team as it was, because the team isn't what it was. And we're getting ploughed through.
Was Edison injured for, I mean, I know they lost 5-1 in the end, but was Edison injured for Arsenal away last season, or was it again a choice to put the shot stopper in?
I can't remember. There was a lot of minor niggles that Edison got through the season. So I think Donnarumma fits into that, you know. We are not as kind of secure at the back as we once were, so a better shot stopper is needed. And if you're talking about, you know, controlling games for large parts and just giving up two chances, but those two chances being goals, then maybe one of them isn't for Donnarumma, and
they draw the game instead
of losing it. And you know, everyone's got to start somewhere. But also, I'm not tactically advanced enough to know the changing game, but I do believe that the game is changing slightly, and the goalkeepers are changing slightly. I think long or goal kicks into the opposition half have kind of rocketed up this season after going down year on year once Edison came in. So, yeah.
I was going to say, Casey, Edison is good at that, but it doesn't matter if he wants to leave. Yeah, like, you're going to have to find someone else anyway.
Exactly, and I don't think you're ever going to get another Edison with your feet. Mm-hmm. No matter how much the game goes by, I think he's probably going to go down as the best footwork keeper the game's seen, unless somebody super talented comes out. To be honest with you, with Donnarumma, obviously he's an incredible shot stopper. I'm not as concerned about the footwork thing because, like Simon said, the game's changing. Longer balls are going to be more prevalent probably over the coming years. It's more his command of his area and his crosses that I'm worried about when it comes to the Premier League. I think there's more crosses in the Premier League probably than any other league going. Is he used to that? From what I've seen, that's where his game seems the weakest for me. I'd be interested to see how that fares this season because I agree. I think it's the season in terms of how the keepers are going to play out is exactly how you said, Simon. As much as fun it would be if he did a Sven thing, you know, where he gives each of the keepers seven games at the start of the year, and Bettinelli ends up for seven games.
Prove yourself.
I sort of teed it up the other day that he's sort of coming in and can either be like the Ruben Dias figure who just transforms the defence immediately, or he's Claudio Bravo who gets off to a bad start in the derby and never recovers.
I'm going to lean towards Diaz just out of sheer.
You're never normally the optimist.
No, I'm never normally the optimist, but as soon as you brought up Claudio Bravo, there was a feeling in my stomach that I've not felt for many years.
The one thing I can guarantee that Donnarumma won't do, surely, is come out of his goal and somehow make it bigger.
or be a hologram.
The other side, we talked about the Brighton game and the 8 second stuff and like not having any options on. Like if Donnarumma is coming in and is coming in like purely for the ability to get it long more often than not, then that doesn't really matter anymore.
It doesn't, although it's what does get it long mean, and does it help in the sense that like there was an Optapeaks comparing the two, and I know you shouldn't compare the two because Edison's unique, but like he said, Edison got as many assists last season in the league as Donnarumma has created chances in his entire career. Four chances he's made in
But I'm,
in his
I'm
whole
just
career.
Thinking, if your ultimate aim is stop shots and when you've got the ball in your hands, get it to Haaland, Haaland holds it up. Donnarumma can do that.
I don't even necessarily think it's about Haaland holding it up. I think it's more about stretching the game and getting second balls, which we haven't been great at. So you'd like to think that Reinders is the man to be doing that.
The second ball move,
that's what he's been brought in for.
And at Wolves, they were terrific at winning the ball high up the pitch.
They were.
And sort of really swarming them in that third. Just boot it to the corner flag. And
you'd think, you'd like to think that, when Foden's back fit, he'd be much better at that. Yeah. And maybe that's why, you mentioned Nico O'Reilly before. You can see him being good at that as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, Trafford booted it in the 89th minute. And
it came straight back.
Yeah. But the heads had gone by that point.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, doesn't matter. You've got in goal if there's no heads on the picture. Wait, that's what we said before, in that case, no brains or no energy, but, at least there was 11 players on the pitch. Okay, so to finish on the transfers, I'm interested in your thoughts on this because people wanted an overhaul. People have wanted an overhaul for a while now. They've surely got it now. They've invested in the team. Whether they've made the right decision or wrong decision, they have invested in the team. Is this a little bit? First off, is it a bit of a symptom of only having tinkered with the team for 5, 6, 7 years that you have to make so many changes in one summer and it unsettles everything? But second off, do you then got to give it time to breathe and time to work out what it is?
You definitely have, but I think there's a difference in how some people wanted an overhaul. I think there's a very loud group online, and it's not just City fans. I think in general,
I mean, the sort of people that had hashtag Edison out over their Twitter feeds.
I don't even necessarily mean that. I mean, when you say people that want an overhaul, I think there is a generation of fans that grow up playing FIFA and Football Manager that just want to change the team every year for the sake of it. There's definitely a lot of fans that follow transfers more than they follow football for the storylines as well. You see people, they want transfer news, and then, you know from speaking to some people that just in the street or in the pub or whatever, they'll talk to you about transfers, but if you try and talk to them about the game, their head's in the clouds. Mm. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. That's just the way that football's gone.
It's a different thing.
Because it's the way that the product is marketed now. So I think you've got to take some of that with a pinch of salt in terms of if you're concentrating about what's on the pitch. I think secondly, the main thing was the age profile of the squad. That needed changing. Not necessarily with an overhaul, but I think it should have been done a lot earlier and more gradually. And then that's why we've got to a stage where an overhaul was required this summer. But yeah, you definitely have to give it time for it to work. Whether those players that they've brought in or whether they've brought in the right players is a different argument. And I don't think, you know, as much as I've been, like I say, bitching and moaning, I think you do have to give it more time than what we have been.
Yeah. Now we've got one listener question, so if you want to get in touch for future shows, at bluemoonpodcast.com on Blue Sky, you can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well. We've started trying to get a few in through Instagram, so have a look for the Instagram story on there. But John got in touch on the emails to say it's the end of an era for sure. Edison, Akanji, and Gundogan all gone. Can any of the panel sing the Boys in Blue song, replacing the name with the new players, but keeping Diaz and Stone in there? Simon, you look terrified. I'm not going to ask you to sing. Don't worry.
I knew what was coming. I was just looking at your face, Simon.
You don't need to. It's not a karaoke night. You're not like, there's no pressure on you to sing whatsoever, because there's only one man for the job.
Got Higgy Bassett.
We've got Higgy. Yeah.
Do you know what it was when you said Boys in Blue? I thought you meant the OG,
the 60s song. Yeah.
That was the first worry.
Yeah. No. So we put your question to Higgy, John. And as ever, he's delivered with a voice note. So Higgy, take it away.
Well, first of all, I want to issue a bit of a disclaimer, because I'm not trying to pass this off as some kind of viable chant that should be sung on the terraces. It was something we were kind of talking about half jokingly, and I sort of ended up being tasked with it as a kind of tongue-in-cheek, sardonic introspective, trying to get something out of the smoking ruins of that now seemingly far distant treble winning team and one of the key iconic songs that accompanied it, which we, I suppose it's just a nostalgia song now, isn't it, seeing as it's lacking half the players that were in it. But if we were to rework it, could go something along the lines of Donnarumma, Diaz, Josko, Aki Kusa, Eight Nori and Johnny Stones when fit. Our defence is porous, everyone outscores us. Where the fuck did we go wrong? Oh, we're the boys in blue. Rumours of right-backs proved untrue. Whoa, please get top four.
So there we go, John. I hope that's done it for you.
I think that might be the best Manchester City thing that happens this season.
That's quite a damning indictment of the season.
No, they can win the treble and that'll still be top.
We had a lot of questions in saying, can you bring Higgy's jingles back? And I realised that I'd put an Instagram story up saying that he wants them retired. And the very first thing I've done is ask him to sing again. Okay, so you up for that? You giving that a go on at the derby?
Me and Higgy stand next to each other, so there's absolutely no way I can even get close when I'm stood that close to the great man, really, is there?
Yeah, get it going around the stadium. But
well, we've got a lovely old lady that stands next to us called Beryl, and she'll probably whack me over the head if she has to listen to me sing.
She isn't one of those that you know. You were talking about the QPR game in 2012 when they were losing.
I've moved seats since then. Beryl's main annoyance so far this season is that because Gaz has moved seats, she's not got somebody in front of her that she knows that she can tell move over a bit because she can't see.
Yeah, there we go. Right, well, that has hopefully been a nice little pick-me-up to finish what has been a show where we've basically been baffled about everything that's happened for the last 10 days or so. But it is the end of this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks also to my guests for this one, KC.
Cheers, mate.
And Simon Bakowski.
Thank you very much.
We have a clip of this week's Nostalgia episode coming up. That was Adam Monk and Dom Farrell picking out their choices for the top 10 City 1-0 wins. Remember them, wins, not just 1-0 ones, but actually good results. If you'd like to listen to the full thing, then it's just £2 a month. You can sign up by going to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back ahead of the Manchester derby. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I just remember the way that that game was billed. I think at the time it was the most viewed Premier League game they'd ever been. It just felt like the weight of the world was on the club's shoulders. After coming back from the 8-point deficit, and this was it, now we could level it, go ahead of them on goal difference. You couldn't have a more pressurised environment. Obviously, as well, you've got the spat between Mancini and Ferguson in the second half where he's telling him to pipe down.
My favourite story about that spat is Mancini was asked about it afterwards. Basically, what caused it was that Nigel de Jong foul. Ferguson accused Mancini of trying to referee the game. And Mancini's response was, from him.
It's the great thing about Mancini. Because he was used to being the downtrodden underdog guy at Sampdoria, he got all that instinctively, like the chip on both shoulders kind of guy. But one thing that he refused to entertain was any sort of an inferiority complex to them. And he was like, no, we're going to go to Old Trafford and win. And we'll beat him again. He was so the right guy at the right time for that version of City that was still trying to work out what it was. You know, accusations have been like a rich man's plaything and all the rest of it. Mancini was like, I play for Sampdoria that knocked about Inter, AC Milan, Juventus and Maradona's Napoli. I don't give a fuck, mate.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.